This is Pure Decking, show number 332 for Thursday, January the 10th, whatever the current year is. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and hiding from the leftist stay-behind infiltration groups, taking their orders from the Illuminati, Hanna-Barbera, Fox News Alliance. We've been deplatformed from Hanna-Barbera. Everything.
In there.
Did you throw Hanna-Barbera in there?
Yes, I did. I was getting ready. I was going, we've been to platform for everything. The only way we can get the news to you now is by yelling it in the bathroom vent.
I wish
the
they
super
had.
The vents will be there to carry it the rest of the way to wherever it needs to be. Aquaman and his army of dolphins.
I love how you both balked at Hanna-Barbera being with Fox
News. Don't mess with it. Don't fuck with the childhood, man. Don't fuck with that childhood.
You guys ever yell through the bathroom vents at people? No?
Nobody rarely. No. But at my grandparents' place, there was a vent that connected the upstairs and downstairs, and I yelled through that a lot.
Yeah, there you go. So.
No, I'm not unlocking the door. Mom's still angry.
Wait till your father gets home, you little cunt.
Oh, that was a great prank to play those. The house I grew up in, it was a great prank to play. Just take a speaker and put it over the vent and blast some noise through it. Because I guess the next one in line was the bathroom, because that's what whoever was in there heard. It's great. I'm Morps. I've been drinking Kentucky Bourbon Barrel Ale. Tonight we have Madman. What are you
and
doing?
I've been drinking Shinerbach, but I've moved to Bullet Bourbon. And in a separate glass, there's ginger ale.
He's well liquidated. And are you?
I would have been drinking, but they really frown upon that when you're test driving vehicles. Just saying.
I just think it would make the test drive more interesting.
Oh, it would, but yeah, nanny state and all that, not letting me get fucked up and drive a car that's not mine.
Oh, no.
See, that's why you don't show up with a bottle of beer. They're called tumblers. And it's not beer, because that smells like beer. What you do is you take some schnapps and whatever fruit juice you like. Mix that shit together and drive.
There's our next meetup. We can all take a handful of NyQuil and sleeping pills and see who lasts the longest on a test drive.
The problem is Static would win by like a mile.
Yeah, he's probably fucking immune to that shit by now.
I was just thinking, Starbucks cup, but not actually coffee in the cup. I mean, nobody's going to question that shit.
What's coffee with NyQuil in it called?
A heart attack. Well, that's what's going to happen. Man, I don't know if that's down, what it's called.
You're up and down, you're up, you're down.
Yeah, I forget what the chemical is in NyQuil. Is it Sudafed? No, it's not Sudafed. It's something else. Maybe it is the Sudafed. I forget. No, it's the Benadryl. The Benadryl in NyQuil is what actually knocks your ass out. So, because DayQuil is the one that's got the other chemical end of it. Oh, I know too many people who probably make meth. Anyways, because we had a long conversation not too long ago about the various chemical properties of. Decongestants.
Sudafed and bed sheets.
Oh, yeah, you're watching a movie with family and friends, and some dude's mixing up a batch of meth, and you scream out, "That's not how it's made." You get some weird looks.
I mean, that's right up there. You're going to get the same looks I got at the movie theater when I screamed there were no elves at Helm's Deep.
Like, he's about to fuck up that dry cook. There's explosions after that. I know, I made that same mistake last week at Toys R Us.
I hate that. They really fucking crack down on cooking shit in Toys R Us. Car park's good now. Recommend the local clinic, dude. That way, when you do get the third-degree chemical burns, you're right there.
Eh. I'm pretty sure you could get away with it in the restroom of most Walmarts. They don't even have private security. They call the cops and wait on them to show up.
Well, dude, Starbucks lets anyone in there now. No questions asked.
Yeah. Yeah. After they got forced to eat crow from the SJWs.
How's that working out? Starbucks have to spend a couple of $100,000 installing needle disposals in their restaurants now.
Little signs saying about the sharps.
Stay close. Yeah, stay classy, fucking Starbucks. Yeah, stay classy.
I would tell a joke, but it would require admitting that I went into a Starbucks because I was thirsty and there wasn't any other place to get coffee.
Dude, the only experience I've ever had with a Starbucks was in the United States. I went in and asked for a double shot espresso. When they called my name out, they handed me a large cup and it was full of ice. And there was two shots of espresso, and I'm like, what is this? And they're like, well, it's a really hot day. You won't want a hot drink. Yeah, can I have a double shot, small glass? God damn it, retarded. They changed my order because it was a hot day. Because most other people drink iced coffee.
Well, that doesn't change the fact that most other people are wrong. So
exactly. Fucking California. It stayed anyway.
No, I went into Starbucks a couple of months ago, and dude, well, one, I wasn't even about to wait in line in the drive-through. My God, I mean, he's crowded as hell. But you go in there, MacBook, 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 MacBook. I mean, just everywhere, fucking Macs.
MacBook, and, homeless, MacBook, homeless, yeah. MacBook, homeless.
Well, dude, so anyways, I'm walking around as I'm waiting on my fucking coffee, which they always look at you weird when you ask for three shots of espresso in the drink. I don't know why, but it's like, it's fucking coffee. What do you expect of it? I don't need to sleep.
You want me to do Coke? You want me to do a line of Coke here, or are you going to give me my fucking coffee? Either way, I'm getting bumped up right now.
But, so I walk around and look at what people are doing with all these, you know, it's like, man, people got some high-end hardware. What's that guy doing? Facebook. What's that guy doing? Twitter. What's that guy doing? YouTube videos. I'm sitting there walking around, and it's like, you all have high-end machines, or at least they were high-end when you bought them, and you're doing shit you could do on a $200 Chromebook. That's pathetic. Yeah. There was one guy in there writing code on his, and it's like, okay, he might actually be doing something real. But the guy writing code, while I was waiting on my coffee, got up and went to the bathroom, left his machine unattended and unlocked on the table. Oh, I was sorely tempted. I did nothing.
Oh, I get it.
I wanted to do so many things.
So I'm at the dealership this morning, and I'm just like, the wife handled everything. I do not want to talk to used car salesman or anything like that. They just drive me fucking nuts. We were standing in this huge showroom. And I'm looking around. Every computer is wide open. They are doing credit checks, transactions. They're on bank sites. And everything's open. Right next to them, stacks and stacks of forms filled out with people's legal names, social security numbers, bank accounts, just lying out in the open. And so I'm like, wife's talking to this guy. I'm just like edging my way over to one of the desks to see if anyone starts saying anything. I'm just touch a bit of the paper, looking around, touch the keyboard, looking around, like walked my way around the back of the desk. There's the router.
Did you
touch
see
the router?
Did you see exposed USB ports on these unlocked
machines?
Yes, okay,
everywhere.
Cool. So you
and
need
I was I ended up pointing it out to my wife.
And she's probably like, "Shut up, leave it alone."
Yeah, she's like, "What are you doing?"
I would actually tell you to order one of these, but you might get arrested in your country for it. There's a fantastic device called a Bash Bunny. It's a ARM processor, couple gigs of RAM, and some storage. It looks like a flash drive. It has a little switch on the side. And if it's in the first mode, it shows up as a flash drive and a network card so that you can SSH into the little Linux install on the ARM processor. If it's in one of the other two positions, it's going to run the scripts you told it to run while pretending to be other various USB devices.
I've just pulled up all the scripts you can use on it.
There's some good ones.
$99.
Yeah, it's not terribly expensive for what it is. You could probably build your own with a Raspi, the little one, W. Is that the Raspi W?
This just looks better.
It looks like a fucking flash drive. I walked around with mine at work and had a couple of people look at it, and they're like, "It's a flash drive. Why are you asking me about this?" Okay.
Yeah.
I currently identify as a USB keyboard. Thank you.
Actually, that's not too far off.
How's your affliction going there, Madman? In 2019, you're is it
trans financial? I'm still a rich man stuck in a poor man's body, but
that's unfortunate.
In a poor man's checkbook.
I really need to open up a GoFundMe for that.
You know, if you use the right language, you might get somewhere. That's the worst part.
We'll sit down after this show and smash out a social justice warrior form for you, Madman.
We'd probably be damn good at it, too. That's the sad part.
That's the sad part. I know I'm good at it.
Here's my goal, $100,000.
Fuck it, man. Let's go for a mil.
Go for a mil?
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
No. Your goal is set super low so that it's more likely to be hit, and then you put a bunch of these crazy-ass stretch goals.
Oh, yeah, and if you, if we get to a half a million, you'll open up a Discord. If you get to like 850,000,
you'll start a YouTube channel.
Yeah, you'll start a YouTube channel. And at a million, you'll shut them all down and walk away.
We're at a half million. Name the lawn that I shit on. And I'll shit there.
Oh, no. For $100, I'll start a YouTube channel doing bad poetry. For $1,000, I'll stop.
Man, that might be $100 worth spending.
dramatic reading of where the sidewalk ends.
Oh, there's a channel for you. Most dramatic readings of children's books. See, spot, run. Run, spot, run.
Put some dramatic. You know.
Yeah, for the discerning toddler.
There we go. Run, Spot, run! And it doesn't work.
Someone's going to listen to this. They're going to start that channel, and it's going to be huge.
And they'll probably steal my sound effects, too.
Not a problem. Have them. Go from somewhere.
Yeah.
Come a dong in the sinkhole.
There, they can use that one.
Yeah.
So what are we discussing this evening?
Well, first one I fucked up the show notes. I've got the discussion link in current events. I've got all the current events in Digital Dojo, and I've got the Digital Dojo in the closing thoughts.
Nice.
Deep.
But the
thoughts.
Link that I clicked, this is a good link, right? I mean, we are going to discuss that.
Yeah, it's the right link. It's just in the wrong spot in my notes. Luckily, my notes are text files, so they're fairly easy to straighten out. I just needed to... Here we go. So, yes. So, it's from ifixit.org. It's from their blog. And the dominoes keep tumbling. Last week, I was sitting there joking around about dramatic readings. Now I got to turn that shit off and actually read the news. Last week, two more states, Illinois and Tennessee, introduced right-to-repair legislation, bringing the total number of states considering pro-repair laws this year up to 8, up from 3 last year. But don't break out the victory dance. It's going to be a bumpy ride from bill to law. According to Motherboard, Apple is gearing up to oppose the legislation in at least one state. The proposed right to repair laws, known as the Fair Repair Act in some states, are designed to make it easier for people to repair their broken electronic equipment like cell phones, computers, appliances, cameras, and even tractors. The legislation would require manufacturers to release information to the public and sell parts and sell spare parts to owners and independent repair shops. If passed, the laws would give consumers more options than just manufacture for repair. In addition to Illinois and Tennessee, right to repair laws have been introduced in Massachusetts, Nebraska, New York, Minnesota, Kansas, and Wyoming. The Kansas and Wyoming bills target agriculture equipment, while the other bills apply more broadly to the repair of any equipment with embedded electronics. Nebraska scheduled a committee hearing for a right to repair bill, a necessary step toward it becoming a law. But Motherboard's Jason Cobbler reports that Apple plans to oppose the bill at the Nebraska hearing on March 9th. John Deere, the agricultural machinery giant, has also come out swinging against the bills. They sent a letter of opposition to Kansas right to repair bill, HB 2122. No surprise there. John Deere also opposed efforts in 2015 to loosen copyright restrictions that make it more difficult for farmers to fix their high-tech tractors. The news that John Deere and especially Apple are trying to make it harder for owners to fix their stuff isn't sitting well with some people. Yeah, they've got some Twitter screenshots here, which we don't really care about. No word yet whether Apple plans to oppose right to repair bills in more states than Nebraska, but we expect it. Apple's lobbyists helped to squash right to repair legislation in New York last year. The bill, S-3998B, died quietly in committee before it could go to a vote, but the New York bill has been reintroduced for the 2017 legislation session as S-618. So, blah, 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 blah. Bills are going to have any shot. They're going to need help. So if you live in the States, reach out to your state reps, blah, blah, blah. So these things are kind of interesting because, and it's a real question. The laws are going to require these companies to publish technical data and make spare parts available to anyone outside of their, you know, quote unquote, authorized repair services. Now, John Deere and Apple have been especially dickish about repairing their equipment. Other manufacturers like Samsung's not so bad. You can go on their website and just order parts. You know, some of these other companies aren't quite so bad about it, but making them release the technical specs so that people can repair them, which is cool because it means you could do circuit board level repairs on some of this stuff. So like, you know, a blown cap or a fuse doesn't mean that you have to throw the whole thing out, right? So you could potentially reduce e-waste. You could potentially get cheaper repairs done. But you're forcing companies to give up what's probably trade secret information on the technical specs, you know?
Yeah. I found a good way around it, if you're interested, especially with vehicles.
They patented it, they had to release that information anyway.
That's true.
A friend of mine just had an electric seat in his car. Mm-hmm. And you know how it just has a grub screw sort of thing that drives the motor, yep, pushes it back and forward? The screw had stripped itself, essentially. And it's about, I don't know, a foot long, and it just stripped.
The screw was stripped or the bolt was stripped?
Well, the bolt was stripped.
I was going to say, I've stripped several bolts on 3D printers, which work on a similar principle. I've never stripped the screw.
Yeah, and the dealer wouldn't sell it because the car was still under warranty. And it was going to cost him $3,500 for the whole seat mechanism. You had to buy the whole lot.
For a bolt?
Nowhere. For the whole like screw, the whole grub screw thing. For the actual...
That assembly, okay.
Yeah, the whole assembly. You had to buy it. You couldn't buy that one part. So we're like, fuck this shit. And we rang the dealership on the other side of town saying we're a mechanics doing a warranty fix. Can we buy a part? And they sent us the part, $5. Plus the, I think it was $8 shipping.
Well, okay, social engineering scam aside. That's awesome. I love it. But you're more clever than most people when it comes to trying to fix an iPhone or a car. So,
but really, this right to repair thing, it's mainly for the consumer.
Yes.
Anybody out there who's repairing electronics and stuff like that, yeah, partner up with Apple and shit because you get to charge a heap of money. But, yeah, I think this right to repair thing, it should be, as a person, you should be able to. I mean, I think there are a few things that when it comes to electronics that I think you should be certified. especially when it comes to safety of others around you. I don't care if you kill yourself.
Power distribution and potentially some stuff with radio. But no, and I get that. Yeah. That makes sense. I just, the only thing I worry about is forcing companies to hand out information.
I'm opposed to forcing them to do parts. I think they shouldn't be able to stop someone from selling the parts. Because Apple doesn't make any of the things that are in the iPhone.
No, but
they're buying those things.
They have been successful at stopping people from selling replacement parts. And the way they've done it is by the Apple part. Like in some cases, like it's like silk screened in the part of the circuit, right? They've got the Apple logo on the damn thing. And so the way they go after it is not saying, oh, you can't make a similar part. They say it's copyright infringement because that's our logo. It's like, well, no, that's just the circuit diagram. No, that's our logo. So they've done that.
I see.
They've also, because the Apple logo is on so many of these parts, they've done the same thing when people take actual. So like in China, there's this huge secondary market for iPhones, like the broken ones.
Yeah,
because they break them down into parts,
and they
resell the part. So if you buy a quote unquote from a quote unquote unauthorized retailer, a genuine part, like it's a real part just torn out of another phone, Apple says it's counterfeit, and they've gotten the government. We did the story on Decking last year.
Yeah,
that they said, oh no, that's a counterfeit part because see, there's our logo. They've counterfeited that. It's like, no, it's a genuine part, and it's out of a real iPhone. It's just not being sold by the right people. So, I mean, there's some definite scummy shit going on when it comes to repairing electronics. But, cars, and, of course, we've talked about John Deere several times. So, I like the idea of kind of putting the squish on that. But, requiring them to put out the information, requiring them to make parts available, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I feel like you're kind of...
Well, go ahead.
You're setting up some weird standards.
You don't require them to put out the parts. You just make it where they can't prevent the parts from hitting the market.
Well, yeah, they can't prevent somebody else from doing it. I'm fine with that.
Well,
so if the manufacturer of the part that's selling it to them is like, okay, iPhone needs 1,000 transistors. We're going to make 1,500 and 500 go to the secondary market. Bam.
Well, I can't.
That company's making more money.
I have fixed, personally, several little circuit boards where a cap has blown. Or an amp has blown its power supply and I needed a transformer. I've done cap swaps on several machines. Fuck, the only reason we didn't do a cap swap on your Xbox, Madman, is because I happen to have a whole spare board. It wasn't worth the trouble. I mean...
I know where I went to buy washing machine parts, up on the back of the board, is all parts to be installed by an authorized electronics. The engineer or whatever the fuck you want
to
call
it. You own the machine. You authorized yourself. It's fine.
Yeah, but that's what they sell the parts. So they'd sell all the washing machine parts to everyday dudes who are fixing their own stuff. But they make you say, hey, I'm going to get someone qualified to put it in. And they know it's just a bullshit statement, but that's how they get around it, to sell parts to the consumer.
Well, I don't think most companies care about selling the parts because... Especially with shit like washing machines and cars, because cars get weird, but it's like, because if I'm making refrigerators, I want people to have a good experience with the company. I'll probably, if somebody needs a part on a machine that's a few years old and we have the part, I don't think that should be a problem for the company to sell the part. I would think the company would want to, so that their stuff works longer, but. What I think is strange is when you get into this bullshit where, oh no, it can only be worked on our things, and if you open up and slightly modify your own electronics, that's a violation of copyright law somehow. And I mean, you get into this really weird shit where, I mean, hell, it's what we used to talk about in the early days of Decking. It's what we used to talk about on IHN, where you don't own your own shit anymore.
Yeah.
Which I've got another one of those stories later, but. Anyways, I don't like that, but at the same time, I don't want to make it to where anytime a product comes to market, you place this burden on the company of having to provide, checklist things of, parts and diagrams and all this other stuff. Otherwise, you know, the device isn't allowed to be sold because you're going to put a heavy... I mean, fuck Apple. Yeah, they can afford to do it. But, you know, what about these little hack shops? What about these little... A good example would be the vape shops that sprung up everywhere, you know, where guys were just, you know, making their own vapes and selling them. Now, for the most part, you could just buy off-the-shelf parts for those things. But, you know, if you made these guys put out these things and make parts available for anything they sold, you put them out of business because it's, you know, one dude in a shop, right?
Yeah. Well,
that's why I say don't force them to put out the parts. They just can't prevent the parts from going out. But as far as the diagram on how to build it, that's 4 seconds. Well, maybe a bit more than 4 seconds worth of work. But you already diagrammed it out once when you built yours. You already have the diagram.
Yeah, I mean, you know, hell, you could sit there in an ohm meter and, you know, tune out a board, but it's just still, I don't know. Part of me thinks it's a good thing. Part of me thinks that you're creating a strange regulatory, you know, possible barrier to entry for small electronic shops.
I'm just flashing on. I've bought a Hun manual for every car I've owned except for the one I currently have. It's not that big a burden to throw it out there.
Fair enough.
And the Hun manual wasn't even put out by the manufacturers of the car that I bought them for. Hun puts them out.
So yeah.
A third party has already came up with the market idea of, oh, people want to work on a Grand Am. I'm going to correlate all the information they need to build a Grand Am from the ground up. And here you go.
Have yeah, they're great books. Do they still make those for modern ones, Mad Men?
The newest one I've purchased was for a 2003. So I know up until early 2000s, they're out there.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's a step-by-step, here's how you repair everything on your car. Here's how, if you want to, from the ground up, build the car.
Yeah, but it's usually not cost-effective to build one from the ground up.
No, it's not. But if you ever need to rebuild your transmission, here's every part of the transmission. Here's how all of it fits together. So I'm like, oh, this broke. I've got to go get part A. I think the last thing I did was switch out three ignition coil. The ignition module and ignition module and three ignition coils on a Chevy Cavalier.
Well,
step by step on how to do all of it.
You know, something to think about though. Cars are a fairly known quantity mechanically and electrically, for that matter. I mean, yeah, the entertainment center's system's not so much, and some of the stuff on the CAM bus maybe, but cars are a fairly known commodity. Phones kind of are nowadays too, though. I was going to say that, I mean, like I can go online and find a reference diagram for an ARM chip and figure out how to build a smartphone. But I was going to say with some of the embedded electronics, that's not so true. But actually, a lot of the chip makers put out example circuits of how to use their chips. So maybe I'm reading too much into it, you know?
The only issue I have, like I've already repeated, is the parts. I don't think you should force somebody to sell something. I just don't think that company should be allowed to prevent the sale of an item. So if somebody else wants to sell it, fine.
Well, you do get into a kind of a strange... Because, I mean, I could see that in getting into infringing on copyright and even patent if you're saying, well, you can't prevent somebody else from selling that part.
You know what a patent is, right?
Yeah, you got to publish the specs openly.
Well, the reason for that is you can already build the Eli Whitney cotton gin and not be Eli Whitney. The whole strength of a patent is, hey, this dude named Bob just built my cotton gin and he's not authorized to. I need you to go kick down his door, break his knees, and give me his money.
Yeah.
So we've already solved that. We solved that when we invented the patent.
Yeah.
So throwing all the information out there, that's not undoing anything with patent.
No, I'm thinking in terms of if you're saying you can't prevent somebody from selling that part to another. If we're saying you cannot prevent another company from selling spare parts to your device, car, tractor, whatever, But you have a patent on that part. Those laws are now in conflict.
If I go out and buy all the parts to build an iPhone and just not buy an iPhone, and then I build the iPhone, I can get sued for patent infringement if I'm selling and building my iPhone. If I go out and buy a part and replace a part on my existing iPhone, I'm good.
I'm referring to the company selling the part. I'm referring to the company selling the part. So if I'm making that replacement circuit board that goes in that iPhone, and Apple has a patent on that circuit board, the idea of the right to repair law saying they have to, you know, they can't prevent another company from making spare parts available, that would then be in conflict with their patent on that circuit board. Now, nobody patents a circuit board because of reasons, but that's the argument I'm wondering about.
Yeah. Oh. They'd licensing fee, I can think of what they'd get around that.
Well, that's the point. Apple doesn't do licensing fees. They just flat out refuse to do them.
Well, that's where they're being forced to do it. That's where the force coming in on, you can't prevent me from selling the part. You can still profit from it, but I'm still able to throw out the part to repair the iPhone.
Yeah, that's fiddly. That's fiddly to do. I could see that getting shut down just on how complex it could end up being. Anyways, let's move on because we're going to circle around on this because ultimately I like the idea. I'm just wondering if it's overstepping bounds of government. You know what I mean? So next article is from The Independent. Facebook has made a number of deals with Samsung and other Android smartphone makers to make it impossible for people to delete the app. The deals, first reported by Bloomberg, mean the Facebook app comes pre-installed on devices and can only be disabled and not permanently removed. And I can tell you from experience, that's already the case on most Samsung devices. Package Disabler Pro works, but it's interesting what else doesn't work when you've disabled Facebook. So, anyways, it is not known how many deals were made with companies, but affected devices include the Samsung Galaxy S8. Permanent apps that come pre-installed on smartphone, referred to the industry as bloatware or crapware, are a common feature on Android phones, so they're usually native to the device manufacturer. Incorporating apps into the operating system in this way is often seen as uncompetitive and has previously resulted in antitrust probes against tech firms, a la Microsoft and Internet Explorer. Facebook refused to disclose how many agreements were in place and did not give further information about the financial nature of the agreements. A Facebook spokesperson said the deals had been put in place to give Android users the best phone experience. Wow. Your shit don't stink and you're sitting there stroking your dick while you said that, right? My God. The spokesperson said that when disabled, the app acts the same way as when it has been deleted, meaning it doesn't collect data or send information back to Facebook. It is unlikely to provide much reassurance to Android users, given recent revelations about Facebook's data collection practices. I can tell you, if you're disabling Facebook on Android, first of all, the interface doesn't give any way to do it. You just say it just basically doesn't give you the option to disable or delete it. If you go into the apps menu, you can force stop it, but it'll just start itself again. And if you go into package disabler, there's like 8 packages you actually have to disable to kill Facebook. But your battery life gets a hell of a lot better when you do it. A report by Privacy International last week revealed how the firm was tracking Android users even if they didn't have a Facebook account. After analyzing 34 popular Android apps with user bases between 10 and 500 million, the charity found that 23 of the apps sent data to Facebook the moment a user opened them. The report stated Facebook routinely tracks users, non-users, and logged-out users outside its platform through Facebook business tools. App developers share data with Facebook through the Facebook Software Developer Kit, a set of software development tools that help developers build apps for a specific operating system. Apps found to be sharing data with Facebook included language learning tool Duolingo, job database Indeed, and flight search engine Skyscanner. A spokesperson for Skyscanner said it had updated the data collection practices in wake of report. Yeah, we got caught, in other words. Facebook said that sharing data is common practice for many companies, and it did so in a transparent manner. Everybody's killing hookers, man. It's normal. Nobody cares. They're
just
already
step
dead
over
inside.
The bodies. Keep moving. They had no families. Don't worry about it.
I love the what everybody's doing it defense. Well, didn't you ever get told by your mom, well, what if everybody's jumping off a bridge? Come on.
I was already on the way down. I'm sorry.
I did
was
a flip.
Very eager.
Did a flip.
I did a flip.
Yeah, that's fucking brazen. Yeah, you can't disable or remove Facebook natively. You got to install third-party crap to do it. Yeah, we're giving users the best experience. I'm just envisioning that Monty Python cartoon where they're doing ridiculous religions, and the guy keeps grinning, and the devil keeps popping out of his mouth.
Hey, dude, go watch The Life of Brian. Right?
Yep.
And
yep.
Tell
it's
me
good,
that's
movie.
Not a parody of today.
It's
that
up
whole
there.
Movie is a. It's up there with a parody of today, man.
Yeah, it's I see that.
It's fucking amazing.
Most messiahs just claim not to be the messiah. I would know. I followed a few.
But this is the one where the dude's going, well, I actually want to be a woman.
Want to be a woman? You can't be a woman. You can't have babies.
But I want to have babies. Okay. Well, and then they ended up going with, we'll give you the right to have babies or something like that. It was something fucking ridiculous. They recognized the right that you can't have babies, so... something or other, but you're still a woman. And I'm just like, fucking hell, that is genius. And they did it, what, in the 70s?
Oh, yeah.
They fucking nailed it.
They couldn't make it today. There's most of the Python movies and most of the Mel Brooks movies you could not make today. People would lose their shit.
Yep. Yep. Great stuff, though. Anyway.
I have a great friend in Rome named Biggest Dickus. He has a wife, you know. Incontinence.
All right, move on. We're going to get struck for copyright violations. Just smash like and fuck that describe button. God, I'm sick of listening to that shit.
The describe button.
Whatever the fuck.
I like it. Oh, I'm going to start a YouTube channel just so I can say fuck the like button and, you know, and smash the describe button. And deplatformed. Fuck.
Yeah.
Going back to yelling through the bathroom vents. Next article's from the Register. Wanted, have you seen this MAC address?
What?
German police published a MAC address because they're trying to see who owns it. F8:E0:79:AF:57:EB. German cops appeal for logs in bomb probe.
Wow.
German police investigating a blackmailer's parcel bombing campaign reckon they know the MAC address of a device used by the scumbag and hope network logs can help unmask the perp. Between November 2017 and April 2018, improvised explosive devices were sent to addresses in and around Berlin and Frankfurt in Frankfurt, okay, it like went German for a second, via DHL. In an apparent attempt to extort the delivery giant, cough up wads of crypto cash or get more bombs through the mail. One package was sent to the Berlin Chamber of Crafts and a number to a pharmacy in Potsdam. The former was defused without exploding after the cops were called in. The latter failed to go off when opened. It contained firework powder, nails, and screws. A little amateurish. Use black powder. Although nails and screws are kind of harsh. A bank in Berlin and an online store in Frankfurt, also received what appeared to be a homemade bombs. An extortion note was discovered encoded in a QR code on one of the parcels. The cops had to piece it together again after blowing up in a controlled explosion. You're not thinking things through there, buddy. QR codes are kind of delicate. And demanded several million euros in Bitcoin to call off the campaign. A police probe turned up the MAC address F8E079AF57EB, which, if genuine and non-spoofed, belongs to a Motorola/Lenovo device, most likely a Motorola smartphone. Motorola still makes smartphones?
Didn't think they did, but
yeah,
hey.
I thought they were... Huh. Anyways, MAC addresses for the uninitiated are essential ingredient in Ethernet, Wi-Fi, and Bluetooth network. Oh, for fuck's sake. It's a hardware address, and it usually doesn't change, but you can tell using the right software, you can change them. Anyways.
Let's not pretend our listeners are retarded. Get to the end.
Yeah. Appeal for help this week. Brandenburg police ruled out randomization because a device with the same MAC address logged into several public WLAN areas in Berlin at different times, and that's why they also believe the address is most likely unaltered. We know that certain programs or apps can change the MAC addresses, the plot noted. However, it is unlikely that several different people have used exactly this MAC address up till now in the Berlin and Brandenburg area. What if the guy changed his MAC address and used the cloned one for a
driving.
While? Yeah. Or the just hitting the free Wi-Fi in coffee shops and shit.
Yeah.
Well, Motorola, it's probably a burner phone, and he's just going to chuck it in the trash when he's done. But, yeah, basically the cops hope a device with the above MAC address is connected to other networks and that there may be a log out there revealing the connection time and location and allowing investigators to trace the extortionist steps or link him or her to CCTV footage and other evidence. Officers noted that some households leave Wi-Fi open and unsecured for others to use, so they're hoping these people will also search the device logs for the address. Assuming any records have been kept to this date or that they were kept in the first place, home router, not likely. Yeah, it's a long shot to put it mildly. Yeah, it's certainly an interesting first. Also, please don't set your MAC address to this address.
Oh, there's a job for me to do this afternoon. Honey, I need your laptop.
Whoops.
If Interpol calls, you know nothing.
Why? That's when you have conversation. Why would Interpol? Never mind.
I've met a lot of authority in my life. I've never met an Interpol guy. This may be a way to meet someone from Interpol.
I was just thinking you could have a lot of fun, you know, putting that into logs and, like, you know, having it show up in odd places.
I put it in here, go online. Then you do it. Then we'll get someone in Canada to do it. Just pop up every randomly, country to country.
I love the concept of doing it, but I don't want to help hide some jackass bat who's building bad bombs.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're not even good pipe bombs. I mean, you know.
Now, I've had a body count.
What'd you say, Madman?
But now, if you had a body count, you know, if they were good pipe bombs, we consider hiding.
We're Americans. We respect proper ordinance here, damn it.
Fuck it. I disavow both of you. I'm fucking traveling sometimes.
That's probably wise, are you? I'm just going to say. Oh, fuck. Next article.
I was going to sit over here. You guys have that conversation there.
Properly sealed in a lead pipe. Come on. Next article is from Engadget. Ring. If anybody isn't aware, that's the company that makes the doorbell with a camera and Wi-Fi. Ring's privacy practices have come under scrutiny in recent months, and the latest report from The Intercept details just how lax the company has been when it comes to users' personal video feeds. Ring's product lines include security cameras, video doorbells, lighting and alarm systems, and the company was acquired by Amazon last year. But recent reports have shown that a large number of Ring employees, both in the U.S. and abroad, were granted unlimited access to the video feeds collected by the Ring products, and for the most part, it appears the company never made its customers aware of the practice. So that's right. All of you people doing strip teases for the Ring cameras trying to impress, you know, random people, the Amazon employees got to see it too.
So they got to see the video of the dude spending 3 hours looking at a Ring doorbell.
Yes.
There was that footage I saw captured on a Ring doorbell of a man making out with a intercom out the front. Yeah, it was pretty amusing. It was on live PD. This dude was literally tongue-kissing an intercom.
Technosexuals. Anyways, Last month, the information described how in 2016 the company granted inexperienced engineers in its Ukraine offices access to a database that contained Ring's customers' video histories. The intercept sources that the access came via an Amazon S3 cloud storage folder that held every video ever recorded by a Ring product. Sources also told the intercept that executives and engineers in the U.S. were allowed to access live feeds of customers' cameras. Yeah, you know what's going on in the company chat room. Hey, Bill, check out camera 4.
Yeah, the hot bitch just came home. Check that out.
Yeah. They also described how Ring engineers would check out their coworkers' cameras and tease them when they saw them bringing dates home, or show videos to other employees when they saw something of interest. The videos were apparently shared to engineers so that Ring's AI could be more thoroughly trained, but the intercept notes that Ring's terms of service and privacy policy failed to mention that staff would have access to customer videos. The company has reportedly boosted its security measures since Amazon's purchase, preventing staff from downloading videos and restricting their access, but the information reports that workers are easily able to find workarounds for certain controls. Last year, Ring came under fire for a bug that let users stay signed into an account even after the password had been changed. Ring spokesperson told The Intercept that videos used to improve its service are sourced from publicly shared Ring videos from the Neighborhoods app, as well as Ring customers that have consented to such use. You know, the little checkbox at the bottom that you can't really read the text, but you can't progress unless you check the box to continue? Yeah, that. Spokesperson also said the company has strict policies regarding its employees' actions. We hold team members to a high ethical standard. Yep, they got to be high when they're being ethical. And anyone in violation of our policies faces discipline, including termination and potential legal and criminal penalties. In addition, we have zero tolerance for abuse of our systems, and we find that bad actors who have engaged in this behavior, we will take swift action against them. And Ring sent the following to Engadget: we take privacy and security of our customers' personal information extremely seriously. It's Mountain Dew serious. In order to improve our service, we view and annotate certain Ring video recordings. These recordings are sourced exclusively from publicly shared, blah, 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 blah. Bullshit PR. Okay, so if you have Ring devices, other people are watching your videos because they're basically dumping them into S3 buckets. Hooray. Man, you don't own anything anymore. Anything related
I'm looking
to technology.
For access to these doorbell things.
Yeah. I mean, shit. Facebook, Apple, Ring, Microsoft here with this next article from the Register. You don't own shit. Run Linux, people. that's the answer. And even then, you got to be careful which distro you pick. There's a Chinese company that put one out that was full of spyware, and they got caught, and they pulled most of it out. I want to say Deepin. And, hell, Ubuntu had the thing reporting data back to Amazon, so even that's not, universal recommendation anymore. Just go live in the woods, burn the computers, throw away the cell phone, live in the woods, tinfoil on your head, hiding from the leftists, stay behind infiltration groups.
Writing a manifesto.
Bending
explosives to a fucking congressman.
You ever read the Unabomber Manifesto? It's kind of interesting in context of today.
Yeah, it is. Like, he is fucking nuts.
He predicted fucking Facebook, basically.
Yeah, but he's fucking nuts. Like, once again, disavowing.
Can we go with, he was wrong to harm people, but he may have been sane?
He may have had a point, but he was wrong.
He may have had a point, but he was wrong. Does that appease the Five Eyes God?
Oh, man. You imagine what religion's going to be like in a couple of hundred years with all this monitoring. And I mean, people are going to be worshiping, corporations that run the social networks, and the computers will be telling everyone what to buy and what to...
They're not going to be worshiping the corporations. I'll call that one right now. They won't be worshiping the corporations. I'm going to call that one right
now. Yeah, they'll be worshiping the mascots of the corporations.
There you go.
That would be idolatry, but no. If no one worships the East India Company when they employed one out of every 20 people on the planet, no one's going to worship what we have now.
I don't know, man. Man, I still think the 500-year reign of the church is about to fall. We may have some dark times ahead.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about. The church is 2,000 years old. We're just going to have a crack up in a civil war.
Again.
With murders.
Like, it's like, only happened, what, 3 times before?
You give or take.
Never happen again.
It depends on how you count the Crusades. It could be 1, it could be 5. I mean, anyways.
Oh, no, this isn't the Crusades, man. This is church versus church. Like, Catholics and Protestants and that just going at each other.
Fucking oh, well, great. Hell, that just depends on how you deal with the American South. I mean, that could be constant.
Oh, and then, like, yeah, you do not want to see what happens when a church fractures. It can be a little bloodshedy.
Yeah, it's called the Sunni and the Shia. We watch it all the time.
Yeah.
So, do we want to continue on religious politics, or do we want to talk about Microsoft stealing hard drive space?
There's a difference in these two?
I can't find any doorbells that are open to the internet.
That's because you don't work for them.
So this
no,
is
man, man. One of the employees has dumped something out there on the internet for everyone to see.
Oh, surely.
Dude, if they're making fun of each other, bringing dates home, they're not exactly the most unscrupulous person in the world. You know what I mean? They are, you know.
Excuse me.
Anyway, next story.
Next story is from the Register. Microsoft has announced that it is formalizing the arrangement whereby Windows 10 inexplicably swipes a chunk of disk space for its own purposes in the form of reserved storage. The theory goes like this. Temporary files get generated all the time in Windows, either by the OS or apps running on the thing. A user's disk fills up, starts getting sticky as space for this flighty data becomes short, and reliability suffers. Microsoft has tried a few ways over the years to help users manage disk space. Windows will start to whinge as disks reach capacity, and built-in tools exist to clear unwanted files. The latest, StorageSense, will quietly dehydrate OneDrive files to free up space. But it appears that such tools aren't enough. In 2019, Microsoft is throwing in the towel. New installs of Windows 10 1903, currently the version of with Windows Insider in the form of 19H1 and expected in the hands of users sometime in April, will feature reserved storage. Reserved storage effectively blocks out a chunk of disk for temporary files generated by the apps or OS updates. The gang at Redmond reckons that 7 gigs of sacrificial space will be a good starting point, but the total might vary over time. You can also shrink the reservation, but you can never remove it from the OS entirely. Users can then cheerfully use their PCs without worrying about their free space suddenly disappearing as a colossal Windows update gets silently downloaded in the background. Space has been pre-nabbed, ready for all those temporary files. Unless, of course, the red reserve space storage fills up, in which case it will be business as normal as Windows temporarily consumes space outside of the reservation, thus somewhat defeating the point. Slightly ominous, Microsoft also said, we may adjust the size of the reserve storage in the future based on diagnostic data or feedback. Windows Insiders will be able to examine or experience the functionality for themselves if they're willing to fiddle with a registry setting before the next build drops. So, yeah, the days of being able to get away with less than a terabyte disk are soon going to end because Microsoft is just going to grab space and reserve it for Windows.
So my swap file just got gig size and permanent.
Well, your swap file actually serves a useful purpose. This is just Microsoft deciding that it knows how to run a computer better than you do. That may or may not be true. I'm not disputing that, you know, a lot of people don't really know what they're doing when it comes to running a computer. But the fact that Microsoft is just grabbing a chunk of your hard disk that it doesn't currently need and saying, yeah, we're going to need this someday, I think that's kind of bullshit, especially if you're dealing with embedded systems or, you know, like if you're doing like a 128 gig or 256 gig SSD, where that's actually a fairly significant chunk of the disk that Microsoft is grabbing. I mean, yeah, that's going to cause problems in a lot of places, especially if you're dealing with machines that are mainly thin clients or remote access or like some of those low-end laptops like they used to sell a while back. They still sell them. like the $200 Chromebook thing running Windows, where they've only got like a 32 gig or a 64 gig MMC module in the thing. So, I mean, you know, Microsoft grabbing 10 more gig when Windows already takes up 30 some odd gig. I mean, fuck.
Yeah. Bunch of dicks.
You're going to need a minimum of a terabyte disk before too much longer just to run and get any use out of the machine anyways.
Thanks, Microsoft.
And again, you don't own your device.
Ow.
FreeDOS. FreeDOS needs to make a comeback. That was a good operating system. You knew what the fuck your computer was doing when you ran that.
Fuck that, man. Just run the one true operating system, Temple OS.
And it was designed to run on a virtual machine. I don't know how well it'd do on an AMD processor. Can we bring back GeoWorks?
Can we, I don't know, not take 7 gigs of my hard drive?
Speaking of, did you ever get that SSD swapped in, Matt Ben?
I haven't done the format to get it running, but it is actually in the computer.
God damn it.
So I'm going to go with technically, yes, it's installed.
All right,
it's in the computer.
He's correct.
Now what he's not telling anyone is that what he's actually done is jammed the damn thing in the CD drive and just shoved the door shut.
Although I should pull out that email before it gets buried under too much crap and save it in a folder next on its own, so I can actually pull up the instructions to fix this when I decide to do it.
Just go download the Acronis rescue image and clone your drive. It'll take 5 minutes.
I may do that.
I think they'll make you put in an email address that they can spam. So, you know, go get a bug me not address or you know, one of those other 100 other
email.
Yeah, that's a good one. And get an Acronis key, make the little boot disk, boot it up, clone your boot disk over to the SSD, boot it once, make sure it works.
Or just get a nice bottle of bourbon, call Analog, see if he wants to hang out for a while. Hey, man, boy, while you're here, do you reckon you could have a look at this for me?
Next time I'm up there, give me a heads up. We can get it straightened out. Fuck. I did almost screw up and say that you lived in Owensburg. Anyways. For anybody wondering, that's a made-up place.
Right next to Albuquerque. That's a made up place, dude.
Yes, it is. Now, last article is from Ars Technica. Almost $500,000 in Ethereum Classic coin stolen by forking the blockchain.
The blockchain's infallible.
This is actually a 51% attack.
Nice.
Attackers have stolen almost $500,000 worth of Ethereum Classic digital currency by carrying out a compute-intensive hack that rewrote its blockchain. Officials with Coinbase, one of the leading cryptocurrency exchanges, said on Monday. The heist was the result of carrying out what's known as a rollback attack, which allowed the attackers to reorganize the Ethereum Classic blockchain, Coinbase security engineer Mark Nesbitt said in a blog post. From there, the attackers were able to double spend about 88,500 ETC, meaning they were able to recover previously spent coins and transfer them to a new entity. As a result, the coins are effectively transferred from the rightful recipients to new entities chosen by the attackers. Excuse me. We observed repeated deep reorganizations of the Ethereum Classic blockchain, most of which contain double spends, Nesbitt wrote. The total value of the spends, the double spends that we have observed so far, is 88,500 ETC. Rollback attacks are often referred to as 51% attacks because, in theory, they require an attacker to control a majority of the CPU power generating a blockchain. Such an arrangement violates a core requirement of any blockchain-based currency. It allows a single entity to write the contents of its universal shared transaction history. Nesbitt wrote, the functioning of mining is to add transactions to the universal shared transaction history known as the blockchain. This is done by producing blocks, which are bundles of... okay, he's just explaining a blockchain. blah, 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 blah. Coinbase paused movements of ETC funds to prevent any double spends from hitting its users. Meanwhile, the Kraken exchange temporarily halted ETC deposits and withdrawals and plans to bring ETC funding back online once exchange officials believe it is safe to do so. ETC officials, for their part, have confirmed the double spends are affecting the currency, but they have yet to say more. So, whoops! Somebody's actually now officially managed to pull off a 51% attack on one of the major cryptocurrencies.
So that's actually attack,
kind of impressive.
Do they need to have access to that many wallets, or do they just have enough miners that for so many minutes they were 51% of everything mining that currency?
Right. So your miners, when you submit a block, so many you need a certain percentage of the miners to vote on acceptance of that block. The idea is that they're verifying that your crypto is correct. So what somebody did, and this is why it's called a 51% attack, is they set up enough other miners that they controlled that would validate their changes to the blockchain, even though they wouldn't pass normal validation. So they were putting all these double spend transactions in, things that normally the algorithms wouldn't allow, and then they controlled enough mining hardware to vote yes on these blocks to get them added to the ETC Classic blockchain. It's called a 51% attack because in theory you need a majority of the miners out there to actually make it happen. Now, I believe in a lab where some people were playing around with just custom blockchains, they weren't, you know, it wasn't like real currency chains, just, you know, just running the software. They were able to do it with less than 51%, but it was random. It was like, you know, did they manage to respond fast enough to get their miners to say yes fast enough to perform it? But they were able to do it with less than 50%. But I mean, it still wasn't like that was kind of rolling the dice whether it would happen or not. So yeah, to perform this attack reliably, yeah, for a brief period, you need a lot of miners. But if you've been collecting people's Amazon keys, you know, off GitHub or something, you probably do it. That or, yeah, they just put a ton of, you know, miner nodes out there for a bit. You don't, more, and this is actually more likely, they found some way to take over several miners. You know, whether it's a vulnerability in the software that's running the mining software, or maybe they just had been collecting them for a while, or, you know, maybe they just...
Could you run a few botnets and have them all mine at once?
Several do. That is something that botnets certainly do these days. Usually they're not attacking the blockchain, though. Usually they're just running the miner because the person running the blockchain is hoping to profit off of it. And if you invalidate, like, for some of the smaller blockchains, like Ethereum Classic is considered a minor cryptocurrency. This is the kind of shit that gets a cryptocurrency kicked off exchanges. You know, good luck kicking off Litecoin or Bitcoin or you know, Ethereum proper. But some of these smaller currencies, Dogecoin, Monero, well, Monero is not really small. Ripple would be a good example. I could see a lot of exchanges just saying, you know what, that's not safe to carry, we're dropping it. So this, you could see exchanges drop ETC because of this. Wouldn't be overnight, but I mean, you could see it.
Wondering how hard it would be to pull this attack on, I don't know, Bitcoin.
Hard.
It's popular enough now that it's resistant, or I don't want to say immune, because as soon as I say immune, it's going to happen.
No, it's not
but
immune.
But it's very resistant to this kind of attack.
There's enough activity with Bitcoin that, and there are actually people watching Bitcoin and Ethereum and some of the other major cryptos. There are actually people watching for certain organizations getting too much control. And in fact, a couple of years ago, somebody was there was a couple of popular mining services that, you know, some of these cloud mining services that were getting close to 50%. Now, it was a company. It wasn't like one person. It was, you know, this company that provides cloud mining. They were doing the math, and it was like 39% of all mining was coming through this company at one point or something. I don't remember. It's been a long time. But there were concerns that if this company kept growing and other miners didn't come from somewhere, that they could actually, you know, Bitcoin could be subject to a 51% attack. So there are actually people trying to keep an eye out for this because you need X amount of you know, whatever 51% of the miners are out there to try to pull it off. Now, that said, there, because a lot of Bitcoin mining was going on in China for a while, there were concerns that the Chinese government would just come in, quote unquote, nationalize all those mining operations and do it themselves. But considering how China's basically kicked Bitcoin out, I don't know about that. So I don't see China going through the effort. They just ban it and say, no, we're using our currency because we can just dictate what it is. We don't have to.
That's what they'll
anything.
Do. That's what they'll do. Walk in, arrest anyone who's using it, and then just declare, I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's, well, that's the fear, right? So,
you know what? They could have Winnie the Pooh coin. Don't get it? You don't get it? Oh, come on, man. The image of Winnie the Pooh is banned in China.
Yeah.
Because they said the leader looked too much like Winnie the Pooh.
Emperor Pooh.
Emperor Pooh coin.
Emperor Pooh coin.
Now,
there we go.
Never mind. It's not even worth it. Let's just move on. Let's just do this.
Ah, kill this story.
There wasn't much of a story. All right. Two things for us tonight in Digital Dojo. The first is a tool called Slack Pirate. So for anybody who's not aware, which would be kind of surprising, Slack is a business version of IRC, to put it basically. It's chat rooms. You can set up Slack accounts, and they're, you know, it's IRC kind of, but it's web-based, and they sell, you know, managed accounts, and a lot of people like writing tools that hook into it. So anyways, this is a tool developed in Python, which uses the native Slack APIs to extract quote-unquote interesting information from a Slack workspace given an access token. As of May 2018, Slack has over 8 million customers, and that number is rapidly rising. And integration and chat ops possibilities are endless and allow teams, not just developers, to create some really powerful workflows and Slack bot application interfaces. As is the way with corporations large and small, it's not unusual for tools such as Slack to find under the Information Security Governance Policy radar, which ultimately leads to precarious situations whereby sensitive and confidential information end up in places they shouldn't be. Purposes of this tool is twofold. Red teamers can use this to identify and extract sensitive information, documents, credentials, etc. from Slack, given a low-privileged account to the organization's workspace. This could allow an attacker to pivot into other systems or gain far more intimate knowledge and inner workings of corporate... Ooh, that's a good point. Yeah, because you can transfer files through Slack, and if you ever looked at how it works on the back end, it's basically dumping them in Amazon buckets. So, yep. This would fish out those links for you, and you could just start downloading files. Blue teamers can use this to identify and detect sensitive information in the workspace that perhaps shouldn't exist on there in the first place. Blue teamers can use this information for internal training and awareness. The tool allows you to easily gather sensitive information. So this uses the Slack APIs to look for the following information. Print to standard output, the domains, if any, they're allowed to register for the workspace, links to S3 buckets, passwords, AWS keys, private keys, references to links and URLs that can provide information to sensitive information, like Google Docs, Trello invites, and links to internal systems, and files which could contain information such as a .key.ssh, the word password, or word secret embedded in the document, etc. So... yeah, you need a Slack token to do this, but those are fairly easy to get if you have an account. You just log into Slack and request a token because they encourage people writing apps against the API. It's one of the selling points of Slack. So, okay. Yeah, it's a neat little tool.
Awesome.
And I'm betting searching GitHub, you could probably find all kinds of Slack API tokens. second thing I have is a little bit more... uncommon. This guy put together a portable workstation based on Docker. So he's got a write-up explaining it. And I don't think this is something anybody had to use straight out. But it's a .docker file designing a... It's like he's got a setup for his Emacs, X Windows, keys, a few other things. And it all reads it off a flash drive, and he gets kind of his customized desktop out of a Docker instance. And this isn't exactly unknown. People have been, you know, setting up workstations in Docker before. I've seen a team at work actually use Docker and basically create a poor man's version of Citrix doing this. But this is the information on how to do it. It's fairly up to date. And I would use this as a template for building your own. I wouldn't try to use this guy's stuff straight up. Primarily because it's probably not going to be all that useful to what somebody might need. It does require a little bit of Linux know-how, a little bit of Docker know-how, but it could be an interesting base if you wanted to try to build. Like, I could possibly see maybe Sard getting some information out of this, being able to put this to some work.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Syntax. I could see him being interested in it too. So, kind of specialist. Don't know how many people would find this useful, but I thought it was interesting, so I threw the link in there. That's all I've got for the show. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer decking every Thursday. Galaxy 15 radio site and subreddit. Madman, closing thoughts.
Booze is amazing, and I'm still wondering how hard it would be to get 51% of Bitcoin for about 4 hours.
It'd be expensive, but not hard. Just need to set up a lot of miners. That'd be an interesting business proposition to take to a bank. We're going to do a 51% attack on the blockchain. I need to borrow several million dollars to spend on Amazon infrastructure.
Like, I'm not sure this is a crime because I don't believe I'm actually stealing anything.
We have a fantastic business opportunity in bond villainy. Would you like to join me?
Yes, I would. Are you closing thoughts?
I really have nothing for this one. I think it's going to be a very interesting year in computing. Very interesting year.
Yeah.
Especially with the Chinese, what is it, their new rollout is coming. That starts up in 2020. The social credit score kicks in.
I think we're going to start seeing people running from technology as much as they can. It's gone from being the cool, fun thing to now it's going to be invading everyone's lives. But they won't be able to get away from it because you'll have to use it for work. You'll have to use it for school. You have to use it for everything you want to do. But you won't
That's why I'm super enjoying not having a phone. I'm watching all these people just, their anxiety level over it is just fucking intense, man.
I forget the Tech Expo. It's one of the last commercial ones that they were putting on.
CES?
Probably. Samsung, Apple, and Amazon fighting over who's going to be the home assistant to run your refrigerator, your toaster oven, your all of that crap. And I'm kind of wondering, how many appliances do you really need on the internet?
None.
Zero, apart from a PC. But hey, before we jump out of the show today, Morps is going to look at that Live Leak video I threw in there. This is something we predicted last year that we're going to see more of. And it's a little video on when you're playing with your virtual reality. Make sure you have a little fenced in area that.
I think I saw where somebody converted this to a GIF.
Yeah.
The audio is going to come across on the stream because I'm watching it. So, okay. Yeah, they're in. Is that gun simulator?
Gun simulator, I think.
And then pull it away.
Okay, yeah, she's so, going to attempt to throw a grenade.
No, she just threw it.
She just dropped the grenade. She just headbutted a brick wall.
Yeah, face first into a brick wall. Well, it's going to be a fun year. Looking forward to more videos like that.
Wow.
But no, this won't be the year of VR. Sorry, kids. Not yet.
Now it's going to have to get cheaper, a lot easier to set up, and a lot more accessible.
Yep.
It is cool. I've got a little cheapy VR headset. Don't get me wrong. I enjoy it, but it's kind of a pain in the ass to use.
And pro tip, kids, if you're in a group chat with a microphone, please mute when you're playing a VR game.
And we're just going to leave you to wonder at that.
Good night, everybody.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.